This is Amber Rolt, logistics correspondent at EG, and I'm joined with Jonathan Powling, partner at Addleshaw Goddard, who's recently led a new logistics report which has been produced by the firm called How Soon Is Now, looking at the issues surrounding the logistics sector, particularly the background to the fact that we are running out of space and what we're going to do to try and ensure that we can have enough developments to fulfill all of our logistic needs. So, Jonathan, do you want to just explain a little bit about the background? What's the situation here and what's driving it?
Well, I mean, hello to start with. I think the report really came out of us looking at the market as a whole and the logistics market as a whole, and we've kind of looked at three things that in totality. The first, I suppose, is the factors driving the growth in the market, and undoubtedly that's the e-commerce revolution, the fact that we're all buying things online rather than visiting high street shops. And the retailers kind of need to kind of have warehouse space rather than anything else in terms of delivering our goods to us in the next 24 hours. So that's, I suppose, the first thing that we've looked at in terms of just really what were the factors driving the growth. And then, I suppose, looking at the market, what's the market doing? Well, we've certainly seen there's been a divergence in the market in terms of investors, developers looking at the big box type of asset versus investors, developers looking and occupiers looking at that urban logistics, so the last mile solution. And then following on from that, really the issues that sit alongside that. So clearly there's going to be some differences in kind of the issues that are faced by those big box logistics providers versus urban logistics, but actually there's quite a lot of commonality, and the purpose of the report really was to draw that together, i.e. where you've got the commonality of issues and identify those and look really to create some form of policy recommendations, which is what we've done, that kind of can assist the market and can engage with local government, with central government, in terms of making sure that we do the right things. We're identifying the right issues that sit in the market currently. So, for example, you've highlighted some already, you know, the lack of the fact we don't have designated land for industrial use, the fact that there's a severe shortage in logistics supply at the moment. So Colliers data at the moment says that, you know, we need 18 million square foot of new warehouse space each year to keep up with demand. You know, Savills data says that we're already producing around 3.5 million square foot. So there's a huge, huge lack of available space, available land, and looking at the kind of issues that we need to tackle to kind of address that.
So what are the main policy recommendations then? How is this something that we can tackle?
So we've created 12 policy recommendations, or come up with 12 policy recommendations that sit inside the report. The main ones really are around looking at that lack of available space and lack of available land for industrial use. And there's two main things there in terms of the government needs to create available space in terms of designating land for industrial use. So, you know, quite often we see housing make the headlines for obvious reasons. But I suppose the policy recommendation coming out of that is saying, you know, notwithstanding the housing need in this country, which is obviously severe as well, that we have an equal shortage on designated land for industrial use, or land available for industrial use. And so, you know, if the government were to designate land for that use, then that would significantly help kind of developers, investors in identifying those types of investments and bringing forward new industrial space for use, you know, for all these retailers that need it. And some of that is to deal with some the planning rules at the moment, in terms of the fact that we have a very complex planning process. And we have kind of lack of resource in the planning departments across our country. And so actually just, again, working with local government and looking at policy around planning to make land available for industrial use, be it, and equally looking at the planning process in terms of how we unlock that kind of the delays in the planning process, etc., that make these schemes viable. Those are kind of the two, when we think about available use, that's the type of policy recommendations that we're making in our report.
I don't want to put a gloomy spin on things, but what would happen if these recommendations weren't met? What would the property implications of that then be?
Well, I think it's a pricing issue, for sure. I think what happens is that you see a lack of available land in any real estate sector will increase prices, both from a capital perspective and equally on a rental perspective. That then puts pressures on retailers, for example. But then equally, are those costs going to be pushed on to the consumer? And if you think about urban logistics, if there isn't a space available for urban logistics, i.e. allowing people in London to receive their goods within the next 24 hours, which was what's common and what's demanded at the moment, then the only way that they can do that is by delivering from further out, which increase delivery costs. And there's going to be a point where, at the moment, it's you can get free delivery or delivery is very cheap. There's going to come a point where those costs start getting passed on to the consumer. And so that's the danger, really, isn't it? It's kind of it's more costs for businesses operating and needing industrial space, and potentially more costs on the consumer at the end of the line.
I think the consumer's involvement in this whole process is also an interesting one, and I think one that's sometimes overlooked, because ultimately it is the consumer that is driving all of this demand, and it's the consumer's non-stop wanting for online retail and wanting everything within such short time frames, which is almost in a way one of the main drivers of all of this. I mean, do you think that this is sustainable in the future to be able to manage all these one-hour deliveries, free deliveries? Do you think perhaps that maybe the consumer should think about changing and whether it's going to be realistic to be able to sustain this in the future?
Well, it's quite interesting, because we had Doddle was one of the contributors. We had Tim Robinson, the CEO, Doddle contribute to the report. And if you think about Doddle's, what they say is that, it isn't sustainable, i.e. delivery to every postcode in the country on a 24-hour basis, it's just not sustainable as the population grows, as the number of, new houses get built, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I mean, the Doddle solution, and there's others in the market that do something similar, is kind of to look at kind of reducing the number of, I suppose, delivery points, so that you're not delivering to every postcode. So 24-hour delivery, yes, achievable, but only if we think about more flexibly in terms of where we're delivering to and where we're picking up our kind of our items from. So the classic example is if you sit on a train, you order something online, you can pick it up at the train station on the way back, and you don't have to be in your house there ready and waiting for the delivery. But ultimately it's very difficult to say to a consumer, once they've got used to something being free, or they've got used to something being delivered in the next 24 hours, taking that away I think is going to be a very difficult challenge. And I suspect probably one where sustainability or not, I think it's what it it's a demand that's here to stay.
Well, what do you think would happen if consumers now, currently, if you want to have a screwdriver, you can order one off Amazon and you can have it within an hour? But I mean, do you really need to have a screwdriver within an hour? You could just go to the shops or order it online and have it come in 2 days' time. Do you think consumers will be able to be more flexible in their behaviours towards this to ease some of the demand?
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We all have our kind of own demands and our own kind of requirements. It's quite interesting if you think about Amazon Prime, which, you know, if anyone that's got Amazon Prime will have an option when they click their order to take the delivery in the next 24 hours or the next 3 to 5 working days, and take some kind of credit for doing that in monetary terms. But I think if you look at the data, most people still click 24 hours, even though they don't need it in 24 hours. And I think it's just so common now, and people like the ability that they can sit there and order something in the evening and it can arrive the next day. I think it's just where the market's moved to. The need, obviously, you know, 10 years ago we were looking at 28 days delivery, and everyone was quite happy with that. I think it's just the market's moved on. Consumer expectations have moved on, and I suppose need versus desire is not necessarily aligned. But that's the situation that we found ourselves in.
Online retail is obviously one of the main driving factors of the demand, and I think there's no conversation ever about the shortage in supply without the rise in e-commerce. But what about the other occupiers? Who else is being active at the moment, and what's the demand looking like there moving forwards?
So you've got your 3PL providers as well, so in terms of, and your delivery providers, so the likes of DHL, Royal Mail. You've also got your, your grocery suppliers, and that's not necessarily fulfilling just online delivery. That's fulfilling kind of the nation's supermarkets across the country. And you've seen, if you think about one of the people again contributing to the report is Prologis, who've got Durft in the middle of the country, where you've seen kind of a Sainsbury's take 1 million square foot. You've seen Royal Mail take something similar, and you've got, you know, a huge amount of lorries and delivery trucks coming in and out of Durft on a daily basis to kind of feed the nation's both delivery parcel deliveries, but equally just, you know, general consumer goods, not necessarily just online retailers. So I think there's a, across the kind of industrial sector, be it retail, you know, the retailers, the distributors, the logistics providers, there's a general demand for that logistics space at the moment.
I think it's even very much product driven, I think, and it's probably not something that all consumers really think about, the whole supply chain. If they open your fridge and you've got an avocado there, not many people would actually think about where that avocado's come from, and, you know, the strain on the supply chain that it takes to get it there, particularly when everybody all over the world wants to eat avocados.
That's a good example, but I think it's just, if you think about at the moment, most of the goods coming into the UK are coming in through the south, and Peel Ports and Liverpool Superport is a great example of, and equally on the other side of the country is the iPort Verdient development, where you've got kind of the, transmodal, multimodal ports and logistics facilities, which are all designed to kind of to do that. So, and the question, the question that Peel Ports pose is that if everyone north of kind of the Midlands, etc., there's a huge, that equates to a huge amount or huge proportion of the deliveries that are needed in the UK, not just online, but kind of, for businesses, for supermarkets, etc., then why are we sending it through the south of the country? Why are we not directing those kind of container ships containing all these goods up to the north and then, feeding on from there? So, it's a really, interesting time as well, because I think you're absolutely right. it's not just a real estate shed that we're talking about, it's a whole network of infrastructure, of ports, of rail freight, in particular, unlocking that in the UK. At the moment, I think 90% of travel, freight travel, is done through the roads. So there's a huge opportunity to kind of grow that rail freight and make that more part of the logistics scene going forward. So I think, and that's one of the things, I suppose, if we go back to our report on the policy recommendations, those are some of the things, again, that we touch on in terms of just trying to draw out the connectivity between all those areas. So the infrastructure, the road, the travel, the real estate, and then the consumer at the end of it.
Well, no, there's a lot of factors in here. One bit from the report, actually, that I particularly enjoyed, and it's something that I've been asked a few times as well, is the future viability of the word shed and whether it's actually right, fair or proper way to describe these increasingly technology sophisticated centres. What's your take on that?
I think the market's really, I suppose, there's two polarising views. Some just don't care, I think we asked I was sat on a panel for the Estates Gazette logistics summit, I suppose, back in November, and we asked the question, and I think most of the room at that time said they didn't care, and let's just everyone knows what it is, and let's just get on and talk about something that's, I suppose, more important in the market. But equally, you've got others where, I suppose, and it goes into the talking to government and actually just really increasing that understanding of the sophistication of the market, that shed doesn't necessarily do it justice. So, distribution centres is a common alternative. But ultimately, what we're trying to say is, for all those arguing that it shouldn't be a shed, are trying to say is that these are increasingly sophisticated assets. These are increasingly kind of technological assets where you've got huge amount, millions and millions of pounds being spent on the technical automation systems that sit within our warehouses. It's high-skilled labour rather than low-skilled labour, which it was historically. And therefore, the word shed doesn't necessarily kind of reflect that. So me personally, I'm kind of ambivalent on the word shed. I think the key really is to get people understanding, the sophistication, the kind of the sector as a whole, rather than focusing on the word shed. But I understand why others have an issue with it.
Well, only time will tell, but I think it's certainly going to be very interesting times for the sector moving forwards. Jonathan, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with EG this morning.
Pleasure. Thank you, Amber.